Hello, and welcome to the last of a four-part series about liberty and security. This panel discussion was held on March 21st, 2002, in Willimantic, Connecticut. It was sponsored by the Northeast Connecticut Green Party. The event was a public forum on the state of civil liberties in the wake of the USA Patriot Act and the ongoing war on terrorism. Speakers were asked to address these issues as they relate to constitutional rights and their effects on Latino immigrants, Arab Americans, and social justice activists. In this final part of the Liberty and Security series, we conclude the question and answer session.
I have a second written question from the audience, which is, if the Patriot Act violates our constitutional rights, such as the Fourth Amendment and other amendments, and if we can't trust the Supreme Court to safeguard our civil liberties, who can we turn to do that?
It's, interestingly enough, no, it's organizations like the ACLU that have constantly gone to battle to protect the rights of individuals that are established in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. In this situation, and I think Azeem said it earlier, if the American people know, then they can call to action the political bodies around them. And I think that's a critical point, because what we can be doing right now, I know there's a moment of a call to action. We can call to have the USA Patriot Bill repealed. There's a sunset provision to the USA Patriot Bill, although it's incredibly weak, where Congress will have to go back and review this in 2005. But it is one of those situations where we need to become active, and we need to demand and hold accountable in the next election period individuals for the actions taken, because that is how we will. And if we cower down and let fear rule this situation that we're in currently, we will be totally disempowered and be taken advantage of. The government seizes the power that is given.
I may add to that my comment is tied to the last question. These laws or these rules that were passed with the Patriot Act and also with the amendment to the INS Code are not new. These are old. They had been called unconstitutionally previously by the United States Supreme Court. As Attorney Pond said, you know, we don't know what to expect with the Supreme Court. But again, we all have a duty to intervene in all of the branches of the government, and of course to speak to our representative, to go to the streets, and to also become knowledgeable as to what the Supreme Court is doing, as the attorney also told you before.
If I may just add very quickly, you've heard that the 20th century was American century, and I think we have to really look very carefully about what's happening in the 21st century. And I think, as an American, I feel America is going to decline unless we as individuals interfere. And what do we have as powers? We don't have military power as individual. We don't have executive powers. But we do have the power of the pen. And that's mightier than the sword, in my view. Because if you tell people the truth, if you show the information to people and you rally people, that's what you've got to do. It's very, very essential that we do that, because we're really going down a road that's going to obliterate, in my view, and this is, I'm not being alarmist here, but I give you 5 years, and if it stays on this trend, American economic power is going to decline in the world, because what we are doing is essentially harmful to our own interests. We have been hijacked, literally, by a few individuals that are interested only in their own self-interests. And I can name you a few interests, including the military interests, the oil interests, a few people that are interested in supporting Israel that I think to the detriment of U.S. interests across the globe. And this has been occurring for many years, but has come to a climax now, and it's going to make this country go down the drain unless we as individuals interfere and stop it.
Yeah, I want to echo that, because, you know, all of us, I think, who are sitting up here wouldn't be bothered to sit up here and talk to people, and I don't think you folks would be coming here if you weren't interested in communicating. And I think you need to be talking because it really is the power of the people that's going to bring this around. But I do want to correct something that I don't want you to be led astray on. The USA Patriot Act does not sunset in 5 years in its entirety. There are provisions that continue to exist and do not have sunset provisions. For instance, the sneak and peek provisions that were referred to earlier are not, I repeat, are not scheduled to sunset at any time in the future. Similarly, Section 216, which I talked to you about with this, which, you know, can be used in consort with Conavore, is not scheduled to sunset. So this isn't something that's just going to go away automatically if we don't do anything. And I will quote the words of not one of my favorite philosophers, but Edmund Burke, who said, all it takes, and I paraphrase again, for the forces of evil to overcome is for enough good people to do nothing.
I want to add something briefly about Section 213, which is a really important, and it's an example of how the Patriotic Act could have an effect on anyone. What that section does is actually it amends the federal criminal procedure to allow the government to go into your house secretly and seize an object and use it for evidentiary purposes against you without notifying you. Up to now, courts pretty much are even reluctant to allow the government to go inside your house secretly without any notification. But with this act, they can go into your house, they could pick up whatever, your computer or something, they can use it for evidentiary purposes and not notify you until the time that you are arrested. But the important thing is that it allows that to be done in any case of violation of federal law. Is not restricted to acts of terrorism. The government might be investigating you for IRS violation. The government might be investigating you for any violation of any federal or administrative rule would allow them to get a warrant. You're not a suspect of terrorism. Your car is full of stickers, United We Stand, and so forth. You really hate people who come to this kind of activities, but you don't pay taxes, and you do a little bit of a fraud here and there, and the government starts investigating you. Then this section of the Patriotic Act could be used to go into your house secretly, look around, pick up things, and not tell you until the time that you're arrested. So don't think that this law affects only terrorism or people who are suspects of terrorism. It affects anyone, specifically this section, which is really terrible, because what allows them is to actually, once they go to their house, to your house, and they get something, they might even leave something too, and they have a warrant. A judge is authorizing them to go there and get things. By the same token, they might also bring things. But the important thing is that it doesn't have to be connected to acts of terrorism. It could be any violation of any federal or administrative rule.
The first part of my question has already been kind of answered. I was going to ask for comments on situating this entire thing in an economic framework and what are the economic interests that are benefiting from all this increased repression. And that was just kind of answered. You just named a few names there. But I also wanted to ask, what we're seeing overseas now with U.S. military policy is the implementation of a lot of things that the Pentagon has been thinking about for a long time, things like they call it full spectrum dominance, the idea of extending U.S. power everywhere. And they came up with these plans before September 11th, and they were couched originally in terms of the globalization of capital. You talked about the reaction that people had on September 11th. One of my first reactions was, this is the greatest thing to happen to the transnational corporations, because now they have a huge excuse for more repression. And just along those lines, mention was made earlier about Operation Northwoods. I wonder if you could just comment on that really quickly, maybe a synopsis, try to comment on the kind of mentality that is behind these, having in reserve almost these laws, and then when there's a crisis, to pull them out and to put them into place.
You mean Operation Northwoods as to what it was?
Just a quick synopsis. I believe that pertained to Cuba in the early 60s.
Yeah, okay. Let me actually read a little bit to you. And this is ABC News. Of course, it was not very much publicized, but it's coming from a mainstream source here. There was a book written by a journalist, and they were commenting on that. In the early 1960s, America's top military leaders reportedly drafted plans to kill innocent people and commit acts of terrorism in U.S. cities to create public support for a war against Cuba. Codenamed Operation Northwoods, the plans reportedly included the possible assassination of Cuban emigres, sinking boats of Cuban refugees on the high seas, hijacking planes, blowing up a U.S. ship, and even orchestrating violent terrorism in U.S. cities. The plans were developed as ways to trick the American public and the international community into supporting a war to oust Cuba's then-leader, Fidel Castro. America's top military brass even contemplated causing U.S. military casualties, writing, quote, "We could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba, and casualty lists in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of national indignation," end quote. And this was a document signed by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and presented to the defense secretary, who was Robert McNamara at that time, who was Kennedy's defense secretary. Just a couple more lines here about it. The Joint Chiefs even proposed using the potential death of astronaut John Glenn during the first attempt to put an American into orbit as a false pretext for war with Cuba. And one last thing here. One idea was to create a war between Cuba and another Latin American country so that the United States could intervene. Another was to pay someone in the Castro government to attack U.S. forces at the Guantanamo Naval Base, an act which Bamford, that's the name of the journalist, notes, would have amounted to treason. And another was to fly low-level U-2 flights over Cuba with the intention of having one shot down as a pretext for a war. And again, this is the way the world works, so we should not be too surprised. We should be aware of how, you know, things work, really.
You were listening to a panel discussion on civil liberties following the September 11th calamity. The event took place in Willimantic, Connecticut on March 21st, 2002. After the panelists concluded their presentations, the floor was open to questions from the audience.
I feel both energized and distressed by this talk. The panel has been wonderful, but I feel unable to act. When it comes to people who have disappeared, I hear figures 1,100, 2,000, more than 2,000. I believe them. Every one of those people has a name, an address, a family who knows who they are. I want to know the names, the addresses, the conditions of residents of Connecticut who've been held in this way and are being held. I can't act on a figure. I can only act when I know the name of the person I'm acting for. I think in Connecticut we do have state officials who would interest themselves in violations of existing law that are happening under the Patriot Act. But we need to have the specifics from the families and friends of those people who have disappeared.
I want to make a comment about that. I think that the same sense of hopelessness, the same sense of a lack of a ability to act that you feel, even attorneys feel them. A lot of people are feeling that way. There are a number of organizations like the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York City, the American Civil Liberty Union, and a number of groups that are attempting to do something regarding this issue. The problem is that when you're dealing with immigrants, the federal government pretty much has absolute control over that. I wanted also to mention something that I see on a daily basis in my work in Hartford, and that is connected with that. It's not people that are being seized and kept secretly, but the impact that all this new culture, all this new situation of that I call a new legal regime, is having on illegal immigrants. I deal with many cases, particularly of women who are victims of domestic violence. I can tell you from September 11 now, the abuses that you see, especially of men who are citizens and who married women from other countries, and that they bring them here, they get them in a catalog or something, and you know, and they have this supposed situation where they were going to become also citizens, and then they engage in acts of domestic violence and abuse and so forth. And I see many of them who are in a situation where they fear. They don't even want to talk about it. They don't want to even go to a shelter. They don't want to even bring it up because they're afraid of the consequences of the fact that they are immigrants, the illegal immigrants, or they don't have the papers yet. I had a phone call the other day of a woman crying that called me because her brother, who has been here for many years and who is a worker and who was driving the car, he was stopped for not stopping at a red light. He was arrested because he was an illegal immigrant. What I think is important, a way of dealing with this, is what I mentioned at the beginning, we have to start a dialogue between the people who are concerned about domestic violence, the people who are concerned about workers' rights, the people who are concerned about the environment. We have to turn off the TV once in a while and not watch headline news because we're not learning anything, and start talking among us as to how we're going to deal with this, because a lot of people are suffering directly because of the consequences of this new law, and it's going to have an impact widespread. So we need to promote a dialogue like we have to here tonight. We have to do it in other places, and we have to open ourselves to new ideas. We have to listen to minorities. We have to look in the history of this country of how in the past people have dealt with situations of terrorism, abuse, and police brutality. I think that's the beginning. Unfortunately, just thinking in terms of legal actions is really limited what we actually can do at this time.
Yeah, I suppose I'd add to that just briefly. If you think that lawyers are going to do something, we're not. Lawyers, and I say that coming from a background of doing social activism, and I wanted to become a lawyer because I naively thought 30 years ago, that the law could be used as an instrument of social change. I don't really believe that anymore. There was a little blip in time when that was true in this country, but basically the law protects the status quo and is not likely to help us out. And we need to talk to each other. We need to have this dialogue. You need to talk to your friends who aren't here. You need to read. You need to get your friends to talk to their friends and bring people together. We've got to talk about this, and we've got to get people talking to one another. We're not the enemy here. We're the, you know, the solution to this problem. But if we all go home and act scared, they're going to get the better of us.
You asked about the individuals that have been arrested and any information about those individuals so that we can help them. The ADC, American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, for example, collects information on people who have been arrested, asks people to submit information when things happen to them. The problem with this issue is that this is only going to get a glimpse of what is really happening. The ACLU and the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee and over 20 other organizations have submitted a request to the government based on the Freedom of Information Act to try and get even basic demographics of the number of people that the government is holding in terms of their races, their backgrounds, their ages. This information the government is not willing to share, is not cooperating with this. I don't think we can do it in individual at a time because it will be losing the forest for the trees. We really have to address the root cause, and we have to look at this as a total package, and that's how we do it, is exactly as you said, is by going out and by talking to journalists to start to get those guys who are an influence in journalism, the Hartford Courant. Why isn't the Hartford Courant doing stories about that? Let's get five of us and go meet with the editorial board of the Hartford Courant. I met with them about 3 months ago, and they don't hear from us enough. They don't get people from here to go meet with them and tell them, go investigate this. This is important.
I think the one thing that we have to remember here is that the government has power as long as we give it to them, and they will deny information to the general person, and they are passing laws even here in Connecticut that restrain how much information that you can ask from the government. And the FOI requests that were denied by the FBI are happening time and time and time again, and legislation is getting passed and passed and passed. And I think it's good to be energized, and it's good to be frustrated. I don't think there's not a person who hasn't done something that's not completely frustrated and a little bit afraid about what's going to happen. But I think, you know, we always said don't talk politics, religion, and finances at work. Talk politics, religion, finances, and the USA Patriot Bill and other legislative action. Because if we don't start talking about it, if we don't start filling these rooms with overflow capacity, is not going to be seen as a priority. In this state, it takes 5 to 10 phone calls for you to impact the statewide legislature. It takes 5 or 6 emails to our own state congressional leadership to make something happen. And I'm a proponent of write letters to your editorial boards, send emails to your legislative leadership because they're still afraid of anthrax and they may not open their mail. But if you send an email or you send something via fax, it's going to get there. And you have to do it. It's almost like it takes one to know one. You have to do it. You have to find somebody else that's willing to do it. And you need to put your money where your mouth is. You need to identify those organizations that you want to support that are fighting the battles that you want them to support to fight for you, and then go out there and assist them in getting that work done. Freedom is not free.
It's so frustrating to get information about the names of these aliens who are detained that even their own attorneys are having difficulty getting access to the evidence against them and to the places where they're being detained, because frequently these people are taken out of the state and nobody knows where they are.
Actually, for those who would like to get some information, a good place to start would be Amnesty International's most recent report. It just came out a week ago. Go to their site, whatever it is. I actually have a copy of their press release right here and a copy of the full 45-page report. So that's a place to begin in terms of getting the information. But beyond that, I think the point we are making is right, that don't just focus on one individual, but try to understand the full situation and sort of try to address that situation. A couple things to keep in mind. As the panel has just pointed out, there was one case where a detainee's lawyer, it took a month for a detainee's lawyer just to figure out where that person was. It took a month. And also, it has not been advertised. Mr. Ashcroft's memo, I read about it to his department. This is the Justice Department, to resist all attempts at Freedom of Information Act, request about the Freedom of Information Act. So that's the kind of situation to keep in mind. But again, for information, you could just begin at the Amnesty International press release and the report and go from there. Right, Amnesty International USA.
AmnestyUSA.org.
Okay, AmnestyUSA.org. Actually, also www.amnesty.org might also have the same thing, because that's where I have this copy from.
While we're giving out email addresses, you can also check out the National Lawyers Guild website. It has a lot of information and links to other organizations and sites of interest. That website is a real easy one to remember. It's www.nlg.org.
Okay, my question is to the attorneys here. If an attorney is unable to get information out from a government agency, like the Department of Justice, for what the Department of Justice does not answer, in any kind of a case, does the state congressional representative have a right to request the government agency and get that information out? Are they the ones who can really contact the let's say Department of Justice and get the information out from them? Maybe a senator or a congressman, do they have a right to do that? Or well, even they are beyond that?
Well, the Freedom of Information, in November 7th, when the Freedom of Information request was made by this assortment of organizations and from specific attorneys, it was denied by the FBI to those organizations as well as to the senators who were requesting the information. A piece of that comes from an executive order that was issued after the USA Patriot Bill passed about what information would and could be released and whether they were going to tell Congress, inform Congress fully on all of the information. There was a period of time where they stopped. They weren't going to communicate with Congress, the administration, and they withheld this information. So senators can't get this information.
All right. So even if you approach somebody like Senator Lieberman here, he may not be able to get what you want.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
but that's not a good reason not to ask them, okay? Because this government and your representatives are going to respond to voters, your constituents, okay? And if enough people call a congressperson and say, I want this information and I want you to get it, they're going to start asking more questions if they feel that there's a constituency out there that's going to back them up come election time. Because if they're not getting reelected, if people are disappointed in what they're doing, they're not going to get reelected. So if there's a constituency out there that's demanding that they do something for whatever it is, in this case, getting names, they're going to be more forceful about pressing this. And just as they enacted the USA Patriot Act, they can bring other acts to curb these abuses. But they're not going to do it so long as, you know, they see all the American flags flying around, and that's what they think that the American people are going to let them do, everything that they just want to do in ignorance.
There's just one example of how far this has gone. I'll just read four or five lines here from a case in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The court proceedings in his case have been so secret that even the defendant has been barred from attending. He has had to watch them on video from his jail cell without the right of participation. And his visa irregularity is so minor that most immigration experts agree it would, under any circumstances, be settled by an exchange of letters and the payment of a modest fine. And here's the thing. John Conyers is a leading ranking Democrat. He sits on the House Judiciary Committee. And this thing says, Conyers, and I read Conyers' statement also about 3 or 4 months ago. Conyers, the senior Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, was himself barred entry into the courtroom during one of Haddad's recent hearings. He and several dozen supporters were forced to sit out on the pavement outside the courthouse.
If we're finished with that question, I just wanted to end with a note of hope. I have a copy here of the full statement that was made by the widow of Daniel Pearl, the journalist that was killed in Pakistan, and that actually was not presented that way by the media. The way headline news put it was they took the sections that they wanted and they portrayed what they wanted to do. And I wanted to read it because it goes back to what I said at the beginning. We have to look at the people who have suffered to see if they can if they have reacted with a sense of violence or there's a hope that we can look for other solutions to the problems that we're facing. So I wanted to read it, and it's going to take a minute, and I thought it would be interesting to finish with this. It says like this. Revenge will be easy, but it is far more valuable, in my opinion, to address the problem of terrorism with enough honesty to question our own responsibility as nations and as individuals for the rise of terrorism. My own courage arises from two facts. One is that throughout this ordeal, I have been surrounded by people of amazing value. This helps me trust that humanism ultimately will prevail. My other hope now, and she was pregnant in my 7th month of pregnancy, is that I will be able to tell our son that his father carried the flag to end terrorism, raising an unprecedented demand among people from all countries, not for revenge, but for the values we all share, love, compassion, friendship, and citizenship far transcending the so-called clash of civilizations. The fact that this woman, after the death of her husband, could say something like that, I think it's a hope that there are people out there who can respond to the current crisis that we have with a hope of peace and mutual respect among people and not simply going to kill more people. Thank you.
Is this a question or a comment?
I need to have the other piece of paper back, the list of people who would like to meet with the Congress people. And if anyone has not yet signed the petition, I have it here.
Okay. I also want to throw in like another little note of hope, and that is that a lot more people are getting concerned about this issue. And I just heard yesterday that the city of Denver passed a resolution declaring the city a sanctuary for civil rights. And unfortunately, it's not legally binding, but it's something where the citizens of that city got together and said, you know, we need to at least have a voice about this. So there is growing dissent around this.
So concludes this series on liberty and security after the September 11th calamity. This program was produced by George King at the studios of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut. Sound engineering was by John Schwenk. The music used in this program was composed by Dominic Muldowney. Thanks for listening.